Good morning. My name is Kim Rain, and I'm going to share some stories with you. I don't understand why some days I feel like I can go up against anything with endless resources, and other days I can barely peek out of my covers. I know some of you relate to this. There are days when another ask of our time feels easy despite our schedule, and then there are those days when we literally cannot make our breakfast. One of my friends reminds me that we're human, and wherever we are at is where we need to be. And another one of my friends tells me that we're sacks of meat controlled by chemicals. I have interesting friends. They are all well-read with many letters after their names, and I am grateful they are willing to support me. But what do I do with that kind of information? So I began to explore models of scarcity thinking and abundance thinking. And there are many. Some refer to it as a scarcity mindset and an abundance mindset. When discussing scarcity, some common themes were rigid thinking, seeing limited options, feeling in competition with others. And when discussing abundance, some common themes were flexible thinking, being open to all the options, and a feeling of strength through sharing. If I had to pick a word for each, scarcity would be closed and abundance would be open. In both mindsets, we are vulnerable. We experience fear and we make choices. When we think of scarcity, when we are afraid that we are not enough or we do not have enough, then we are closed from others. We are vulnerable and alone. When we think of abundance, when we can risk arranging the view of our life to see what we have, and that at least in this moment, we have enough and we are enough, then we're open to others. We allow our vulnerability to create connection rather than distance, which ultimately makes us stronger and more resilient. I believe that the more we work the muscle of abundance, the less it feels like fear, because we move through that fear. And fear is important to our survival. It's when fear takes charge that we begin to feel paralyzed and limited. My husband was working at a very stressful job when he had a leg injury that led to multiple hospitalizations, surgeries, and infections. This was an incredibly stressful time that was made worse by the pressure of his job. When he returned to work finally, he still had an IV that was placed in his chest and heart, several weeks of antibiotics, and a variety of other medicines. The second day he returned to work, his employer let him know his position had been eliminated, and he had 2 days to decide what he was going to do. Would he stay with this company, doing basically the same job with 40% less pay, and have insurance and benefits? Or leave this company, his insurance, his benefits, despite not just his medical issues, but the medical issues for each of our family members? And be left with the burden of being unemployed. Those were pretty intense 48 hours. We sought the advice of some of those friends with lots of letters at the end of their names. We attempted a cost-benefit analysis for every option. We realized the cost of staying at that job was greater than the cost of not having a job. We decided he would walk away. We also recognized we had many privileges in that situation that afforded us those options. I share this with you because I realized then that our lives were better when we were open to possibilities and connected with each other and family. My partner's former employer wouldn't have provided that. We were able to make this choice despite our fears. When my parents began civilian life post-Vietnam, my father struggled with finding employment. He pieced together various jobs, began learning a trade, bought a house through the GI Bill, and then had a motorcycle accident. He had been trying to heal his heart and mind from the war, and now he was faced with healing his body while reconciling the inability to work. My mom stepped up, selling Tupperware, Discovery Toys, Avon, Artex, and more. And once my father could work again, he continued to apprentice as a carpenter and a floor installer. As a child, I wanted for nothing, and I knew we were poor. We bought things on layaway. We had food stamps. We ate government cheese. But I wasn't aware of financial stress in our family. When I was a teenager, my family moved to Texas, where my father had more job opportunities than time, which meant we also had money. My parents talked about how great it was not to be poor anymore. This was also a time of unhappiness. We were away from friends, family, and Midwest values. And if you've been to Texas, you know that means a lot. And losing it all hung over our lives. It was palpable. It also happened. We lost it all. We moved back to Milwaukee, and my parents' marriage lasted another year. I have also lost most of my belongings several times, once in a house fire and twice due to burglaries. I have had the experience of living in deep debt and living debt-free. When I practice being open, I have options and resources to deal with life. My sufferings aren't any greater than another's. It's just that life guarantees change and nothing else. When I started writing, I had no idea I would end up talking about vulnerability and resilience. I swear it, but here I am. This theme runs through just about every Sunday service that I share, and it usually doesn't start out with that intention. I'm beginning to see this at the center of my spiritual foundation. Like most UUs, I believe we are all part of the interdependent web of life. That is scary. It means we need each other. But the good news is that our lives are more abundant when we're together. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Brian McNerlin. Allow me to tell you a story about when I felt that I didn't have enough. I was alone at age 30, and like the late novelist Jean Rhys said, I was empty of everything. I was empty of everything but the thin, frail ghosts in my room. I was living by myself, in debt, no closer to finishing my graduate degree than I had been in the year before, and paralyzed, unable to lift myself from the well of self-loathing. My friends were completing their degrees, getting jobs, and moving across the country, and I couldn't help making comparisons and seeing how I didn't measure up. In the book Voluntary Simplicity, Duane Elgin writes, "The proof of manhood has often been equated with the ability to succeed in the modern world, and for many men, consumption has served purposes far beyond that of meeting genuine material needs. High earnings and high consumption have been used as evidence of masculine competence, potency, and social status." Well, perhaps that was what I was thinking. I was at an all-time low. A friend helped connect me to a part-time job, a small thing, a few extra dollars. I didn't think it would amount to much. But it was there that I met Laura, and by the next year we were married. I found someone to love and someone who loved me. And maybe that was enough. A few years later, we had Sam, such an intensity of love and joy, and I fell in love all over again. Our first child, the three of us, together. Maybe that was going to be enough. Well, that was so much fun that we thought we'd do it again. So Max was born. Two kids, two boys, and then I hit the 40-year mark. We were thankful for what we had, living in the flatlands of Illinois. Maybe that was going to be enough. A few years later, Laura didn't want to keep all this love just to the four of us, and we decided to become foster parents. And one day we got a phone call. It was time for us to step up. I was reluctant. In fact, I was panicking about taking this on. Our cup was already pretty full, responsibility-wise, and I said, "I think we have enough. I'm not sure I can handle much more." Life was good. No one was in diapers anymore, but it happened. "Go get the crib out of the basement," she said. And one night, as I held Rose in the middle of the night and the bright beams of the moon as she was falling asleep in my arms, I said, "You know, maybe this would be enough." And even with all that love, a warm home, a reassuring sense of security, with nearly every rising sun, I would wonder deep, deep down to my core, today, do I have enough in me? Enough hours to give to my job? Enough wisdom to give to the kids? Enough money to provide for my family? Were there enough years to spend with my wife? Is there enough left to give anybody else? In psychology, there is something called a scarcity mindset, as Kim told us about. And there's evidence that shows that when we think we don't have enough, when we feel something is lacking, whether it's money, time, calories, or even love, that in our minds, something changes and we don't think as clearly or as compassionately. Contrast that with an abundance mindset. It is said that this perspective comes from a deep sense of worth and contentment, and that this is an internal feeling rather than something that comes from receiving external or material goods. It's a paradigm that's grounded in the belief that there is more than enough for everyone. Alternatively, a scarcity mindset is the belief that there will never be enough, and resulting in feelings of fear, stress, and anxiety. I've learned that there are small steps that I can take to get myself into the abundance frame of mind. Rather than talking about the things I don't have, I can engage in conversations with friends and family about the multitude of things that I do have. I can ask my friends about the things that have gone well for them in the last week. I can focus on the big things that they're working on. I can talk about personal achievements and personal successes and personal experiences and leave the talk about the things that I don't have and the things I'll never achieve out of the conversation. I'm not sure I can entirely shift to this mindset, and that may be obvious. It would be difficult to have this approach 100% of the time. And perhaps there's some benefit to thinking of scarcity and abundance in a more balanced yin-yang sort of way. For example, as much as I try, as I make my way through my 50s, it's becoming quite clear that I won't be able to do all the things I wanted to do with my life. I need to accept my mortality. My midlife moment here is bringing into sharp relief that the time I have left is shrinking and that the time I've wasted is growing larger. Perhaps now is the time to restructure my life around those experiences that are truly essential. In fostering a shift to an abundance mindset, I see that I have the capacity to push myself to give more. More love, more material, more of my precious time. And these are gifts that we all have. Gifts, because they are small sacrifices. As I reflect on my commitment to an abundance mindset, I see that I spend about 50% of my time seeing the world through that lens and 50% in thinking in scarcity terms. 50% of my thinking that the glass is half full and 50% that the glass is half empty. 50% in thinking that I have a boundless amount of love for the world and 50% in thinking that I need to share it sparingly. 50%. 50% thinking in terms of abundance. And now I have to ask myself, is that really enough?